I'm living here. Most of the inhabitants live off the sea, and as you know, my speciality, apart from illusions, is weather. Sometimes I'll calm a storm, sometimes conjure one up, sometimes drive schools of whiting and cod closer to the shores with a westerly wind. I can survive. That is, he added miserably, I could. How come I could? Why the change of name? Destiny has many faces. Mine is beautiful on the outside, and hideous on the inside. She has stretched her bloody talons towards me.
You've not changed a bit, Stregobor. Geralt grimaced. You're talking nonsense while making wise and meaningful faces. Can't you speak normally?
I can, sighed the wizard. I can, if that makes you happy. I made it all the way here, hiding and running from a monstrous being that wants to murder me. My escape proved in vain. It found me. In all probability, it's going to try to kill me tomorrow, or at the latest the day after.
Uh-huh, said the Witcher dispassionately. Now I understand.
My facing death doesn't impress you much, does it?
Stregobor, said Geralt, that's the way of the world. One sees all sorts of things when one travels. Two peasants kill each other over a field which, the following day, will be trampled flat by two counts and their retinues, trying to kill each other off. Men hang from trees at the roadside. Brigands slash merchants' throats. At every step in town, you trip over corpses in the gutters. In palaces, they stab each other with daggers, and somebody falls under the table at a banquet every minute, blue from poisoning. I'm used to it. So why should a death threat impress me? And one directed at you at that?
One directed at me at that, Stregobor repeated with a sneer. And I considered you a friend. Counted on your help.
Our last meeting, said Geralt, was in the court of King Iddi of Colvir. I'd come to be paid for killing the Amphisbaena, which had been terrorizing the neighbourhood. You and your compatriot Zavist vied with each other to call me a charlatan, a thoughtless murdering machine and a scavenger. Consequently, not only didn't Iddi pay me a penny, he gave me 12 hours to leave Colvir, and since his hourglass was broken, I barely made it. And now you say you're counting on my help. You say a monster's after you. What are you afraid of, Stregobor? If it catches up with you, tell it you like monsters, that you protect them, and make sure no witcher scavenger ever troubles their peace. Indeed, if the monster disembowels and devours you, it'll prove terribly ungrateful.
The wizard turned his head away silently. Geralt laughed.
Don't get all puffed up like a frog magician. Tell me what's threatening you. We'll see what can be done.
Have you heard of the curse of the Black Sun?
But of course, except that it was called the Mania of Mad Eltibald, after the wizard who started the lark and caused dozens of girls from good, even noble families, to be murdered or imprisoned in towers. They were supposed to have been possessed by demons, cursed, contaminated by the Black Sun, because that's what, in your pompous jargon, you called the most ordinary eclipse in the world. Eltibald wasn't mad at all. He deciphered the writing on Daukmenhirs, on tombstones in the Vosgor necropolises, and examined the legends and traditions of Weretots. All of them spoke of the eclipse in no uncertain terms. The Black Sun was to announce the imminent return of Lilith, still honoured in the East under the name of Naya, and the extermination of the human race. Lilith's path was to be prepared by 60 women wearing gold crowns, who would fill the river valleys with blood.
Nonsense, said the Witcher. And what's more, it doesn't rhyme. All decent predictions rhyme. Everyone knows what Eltibald and the Council of Wizards had in mind at the time. You took advantage of a madman's ravings to strengthen your own authority, to break up alliances, ruin marriage allegiances, stir up dynasties. In a word, to tangle the strings of crowned puppets even more. And here you are, lecturing me about predictions, which any old storyteller at the marketplace would be ashamed of. You can have your reservations about Eltibald's theories, about how the predictions were interpreted, but you can't challenge the fact that there have been horrendous mutations among girls born just after the eclipse.
And why not? I've heard quite the opposite.
I was present when they did an autopsy on one of them, said the wizard. Geralt! What we found inside the skull and marrow could not be described.
some sort of red sponge. The internal organs were all mixed up. Some were missing completely. Everything was covered in moving cilia, bluish-pink shreds. The heart was six-chambered, with two chambers practically atrophied. What do you say to that? I've seen people with eagle's talons instead of hands, people with a wolf's fangs, people with additional joints, additional organs, and additional senses, all of which were the effects of your messing about with magic. You've seen all sorts of mutations, you say. The magician raised his head. And how many of them have you slaughtered for money, in keeping with your witcher's calling? Well, because one can have a wolf's fangs and go no further than bearing them at the trollops in taverns, or one can have a wolf's nature too and attack children. And that's just how it was with the girls who were born after the eclipse. Their outright insane tendency to cruelty, aggression, sudden bursts of anger, and an unbridled temperament were noted.
You can say that about any woman, sneered Geralt. What are you drivelling on about? You're asking me how many mutants I've killed. Why aren't you interested in how many I've extricated from spells, freed from curses? I, a witcher, despised by you. And what have you done, you mighty magicians?
A higher magic was used, ours and that of the priests in various temples. All attempts ended in the girls' deaths.
That speaks badly of you, not the girls. And so we've now got the first corpses. I take it the only autopsies were done on them.
No. Don't look at me like that. You know very well that there were more corpses, too. It was initially decided to eliminate all of them. We got rid of a few. Autopsies were done on all of them. One of them was even vivisectioned.
And you sons of bitches have the nerve to criticise witches.
Oh, Stregobor, the day will come when people will learn and get the better of you.
I don't think a day like that will come soon, said the wizard caustically.
Don't forget that we were acting in the people's defence. The mutant girls would have drowned entire countries in blood.
So say you magicians, turning your noses up, so high and mighty with your auras of infallibility. While we're on the subject, surely you're not going to tell me that in your hunt for these so-called mutants, you haven't once made a mistake.
All right, said Stregobor after a long silence. I'll be honest, although for my own sake I shouldn't. We did make a mistake. More than one. Picking them out was extremely difficult, and that's why we stopped getting rid of them and started isolating them instead.
Your famous towers, snorted the Witcher.
Our towers? But that was another mistake. We underestimated them. Many escaped. Then some mad fashion to free imprisoned beauties took hold of princes, especially the younger ones, who didn't have much to do and still less to lose. Most of them, fortunately, twisted their necks.
As far as I know, those imprisoned in the towers died quickly. It's been said you must have helped them somewhat.
That's a lie. But it is true that they quickly fell into apathy, refused to eat. What is interesting is that shortly before they died, they showed signs of the gift of clairvoyance. Further proof of mutation.
Your proofs are becoming ever less convincing. Do you have any more?
I do. Sylvina, the Lady of Narok, whom we never managed to get close to because she gained power so quickly. Terrible things are happening in Narok now. Fialka, Avamir's daughter, escaped her tower using a homemade rope and is now terrorizing North Velhad. Berniker of Talgar was freed by an idiot prince. Now he's sitting in a dungeon, blinded, and the most common feature of the Talgar landscape is a set of gallows. There are other examples, too.
Of course there are, said the Witcher.
In Yamalak, for instance, old man Abrad reigns. He's got scrofula. Not a single tooth in his head, was probably born some 100 years before this eclipse, and can't fall asleep unless someone's being tortured to death in his presence. He's wiped out all his relatives and emptied half of the country in crazy, how did you put it, attacks of anger? There are also traces of a rampant temperament. Apparently, he was nicknamed Abrad Jack up the Skirt in his youth. Oh, Stregobor, it would be great if the cruelty of rulers could be explained away by mutations or curses. Listen, Geralt, no. You won't win me over with your reasons, nor convince me that Eltibald wasn't a murdering madman. So let's get back to the monster threatening you. You'd better understand that after the introduction you've given me, I don't like the story. But I'll hear you out.
Without interrupting with spiteful comments?
That I can't promise.
Oh, well.
Stregobor slipped his hands into the sleeves of his robe. And it'll only take longer.
Well, the story begins in Cretan, a small principality in the north. The wife of Fredefalk, the prince of Cretan, was Aridea, a wise, educated woman. She had many exceptional adepts of the magical arts in her family, and, through inheritance, no doubt, she came into possession of a rare and powerful artifact, one of Nehelenia's mirrors. They're chiefly used by prophets and oracles, because they predict the future accurately, albeit intricately.
Aridea quite often turned to the mirror with the usual question, I take it, interrupted Geralt. Who is the fairest of them all? I know, all Nehelenia's mirrors are either polite or broken.
You're wrong. Aridea was more interested in her country's fate, and the mirror answered her questions by predicting a horrible death for her and for a great number of others by the hand, or fault, of Fredefalk's daughter from his first marriage. Aridea ensured this news reached the council, and the council sent me to Cradon. I don't have to add that Fredefalk's firstborn daughter was born shortly after the eclipse. I was quite discreet for a little while. She managed to torture a canary and two puppies during that time, and also gouged out a servant's eye with the handle of a comb. I carried out a few tests using curses, and most of them confirmed that the little one was a mutant. I went to Aridea with the news, because Fredefalk's daughter meant the world to him. Aridea, as I said, wasn't stupid.
Of course, Geralt interrupted again. And no doubt she wasn't head over heels in love with her stepdaughter. She preferred her own children to inherit the throne. I can guess what followed. How come nobody throttled her, and you too, while they were at it?
Stregobor sighed, raised his eyes to heaven, where the rainbow was still shimmering colourfully and picturesquely.
I wanted to isolate her, but Aridea decided otherwise. She sent the little one out into the forest with a hired thug, a trapper. We found him later in the undergrowth, without any trousers, so it wasn't hard to recreate the turn of events. She had dug a brooch pin into his brain, through his ear, no doubt while his attention was on entirely different matters.
If you think I feel sorry for him, muttered Geralt, then you're wrong.
We organized a manhunt, continued Stregobor, but all traces of the little one had disappeared. I had to leave Cradon in a hurry, because Fredefalk was beginning to suspect something.
Then, 4 years later, I received news from Aridea. She'd tracked down the little one, who was living in Mahakam with seven gnomes, whom she'd managed to convince it was more profitable to rob merchants on the roads than to pollute their lungs with dust from the mines. She was known as Shrike, because she liked to impale the people she caught on a sharp pole while they were still alive. Several times Aridea hired assassins, but none of them returned. Well, then it became hard to find anyone to try. Shrike had already become quite famous. She'd learned to use a sword so well there was hardly a man who could defy her. I was summoned and arrived in Cradon secretly, only to learn that someone had poisoned Aridea. It was generally believed that it was the work of Fredefalk, who had found himself a younger, more robust mistress. But I think it was Renfri.
Renfri? That's what she was called. I said she'd poisoned Aridea.
Shortly afterwards, Prince Fedefalk died in a strange hunting accident, and Aridea's eldest son disappeared without a word.
That must have been the little one's doing, too. I say little, but she was 17 by then, and she was pretty well developed.
Meanwhile, the wizard picked up after a moment's break. She and her gnomes had become the terror of the whole of Mahakam. Until one day they argued about something. I don't know what, sharing out the loot, or whose turn it was to spend the night with her. Anyway, they slaughtered each other with knives. Only Shrike survived. Only her. And I was in the neighbourhood at the time. We met face to face. She recognised me in a flash and knew the part I'd played in Cretan. I tell you, Geralt, I had barely managed to utter a curse, and my hands were shaking like anything, when that wildcat flew at me with a sword. I turned her into a neat slab of mountain crystal, 6 ells by 9. When she fell into a lethargy, I threw the slab into the gnome's mine and brought the tunnels down on it.
Shabby work, commented Geralt.
That spell could have been reversed. Couldn't you have burnt it to cinders? You know, so many nice spells, after all.
No, it's not my speciality. But you're right. I did make a hash of it. Some idiot prince found her, spent a fortune on a counter-curse, reversed the spell, and triumphantly took her home to some out-of-the-way kingdom in the east. His father, an old brigand, proved to have more sense. He gave his son a hiding, and questioned Shrike about the treasures which she and the gnomes had seized, and which she'd hidden. His mistake was to allow his elder son to assist him when he had her stretched out, naked on the executioner's bench. Somehow, the following day, that same eldest son, now an orphan bereft of siblings, was ruling the kingdom, and Shrike had taken over the office of first favourite.
Meaning she can't be ugly.
That's a matter of taste. She wasn't a favourite for long. Up until the first coup d'etat at the palace, to give it a grand name, it was more like a barn. It soon became clear that she hadn't forgotten about me. She tried to assassinate me 3 times in Covia. I decided not to risk a 4th attempt and to wait her out in Pontar. Again, she found me. This time I escaped to Angren, but she found me there, too. I don't know how she does it. I cover my traces well. It must be a feature of her mutation.
What stopped you from casting another spell to turn into crystal? Scruples?
No, I don't have any of those. She had become resistant to magic.
That's impossible.
It's not. It's enough to have the right artifact or aura. Or this could also be associated with her mutation, which is progressing. I escaped from Angren and hid here in Arxi in Blaviken. I've lived in peace for a year, but she's tracked me down again.
How do you know? Is she already in town?
Yes, I saw her in the crystal ball. The wizard raised his wand. She's not alone. She's leading a gang, which shows that she's brewing something serious.
Geralt, I don't have anywhere else to run. I don't know where I could hide.
The fact that you've arrived here exactly at this time can't be a coincidence. It's fate.
The Witcher raised his eyebrows.
What's on your mind?
Surely it's obvious. You're going to kill her.
I'm not a hired thug, Stregobor.
You're not a thug, agreed.
I kill monsters for money. Beasts which endanger people. Horrors conjured up by spells and sorceries cast by the likes of you.
Not people.
She's not human. She's exactly a monster, a mutant, a cursed mutant.
You brought a Kikimora here. Shrike's worse than a Kikimora. A Kikimora kills because it's hungry, but Shrike does it for pleasure.
Kill her, and I'll pay you whatever sum you ask. Within reason, of course.
I've already told you. I consider the story about mutations and Lilith's curse to be nonsense. The girl has her reasons for settling her account with you, and I'm not going to get mixed up in it. Turn to the alderman, to the town guards. You're the town wizard. You're protected by municipal law.
I spit on the law, the alderman and his help, exploded Stregobor. I don't need defence. I need you to kill her. Nobody's going to get into this tower. I'm completely safe here. But what's that to me? I don't intend to spend the rest of my days here, and Shrike's not going to give up while I'm alive. Am I to sit here in this tower and wait for death?
They did. Do you know what, magician? You should have left that hunt for the girls to other, more powerful wizards. You should have foreseen the consequences.
Please, Geralt. No, Stregobor.
The sorcerer was silent. The unreal sun in its unreal sky hadn't moved towards the zenith, but the Witcher knew it was already dusk in Blaviken. He felt hungry.
Geralt, said Stregobor, when we were listening to Eltibald, many of us had doubts, but we decided to accept the lesser evil. Now I ask you to make a similar choice.
Evil is evil, Stregobor, said the Witcher seriously as he got up.
Lesser, greater, middling, it's all the same. Proportions are negotiated, boundaries blurred.
I'm not a pious hermit. I haven't done only good in my life. But if I'm to choose between one evil and another, then I prefer not to choose at all. Time for me to go.
We'll see each other tomorrow.
Maybe, said the wizard, if you get here in time.
Part 3. The Golden Court, the country town's elegant inn, was crowded and noisy. The guests, locals and visitors, were mostly engaged in activities typical for their nation or profession. Serious merchants argued with dwarves over the price of goods and credit interest. Less serious merchants pinched the backsides of the girls carrying beer, cabbage and beans. Local nitwits pretended to be well-informed. Harlots were trying to please those who had money while discouraging those who had none. Carters and fishermen drank as if there was no tomorrow. Some seamen were singing a song which celebrated the ocean waves, the courage of captains and the graces of mermaids, the latter graphically and in considerable detail.
"Exert your memory, friend," Kolderman said to the innkeeper, leaning across the counter in order to be heard over the din. "Six men and a wench, all dressed in black leather, studded with silver in the Novigradian style. I saw them at the turnpike. Are they staying here or at the tuna fish?"
The innkeeper wrinkled his bulging forehead and wiped a tankard on his striped apron.
"Here, alderman," he finally said. "They say they've come for the market, but they all carry swords, even the woman, dressed, as you said, in black."
"Well," the alderman nodded, "where are they now? I don't see them here."
"In the lesser alcove. They paid in gold."
"I'll go in alone," said Geralt. "There's no point in making this an official affair in front of them all, at least for the time being. I'll bring her here."
"Maybe that's best, but be careful. I don't want any trouble."
"I'll be careful."
The seamen's song, judging by the growing intensity of obscene words, was reaching its grand finale. Geralt drew aside the curtain, stiff and sticky with dirt, which hid the entrance to the alcove. Six men were seated at the table. Shrike wasn't with them.
"What do you want?"
yelled the man who noticed him first. He was balding, and his face was disfigured by a scar which ran across his left eyebrow, the bridge of his nose, and his right cheek.
"I want to see Shrike."
Two identical figures stood up. Identical, motionless faces and fair, dishevelled, shoulder-length hair. Identical, tight-fitting black outfits, glistening with silver ornaments. And with identical movements, the twins took identical swords from the bench.
"Keep calm, Vire. Sit down, Nymir," said the man with the scar,
leaning his elbows on the table.
"Who do you say you want to see, brother? Who's Shrike?"
"You know very well who I mean."
"Who's this, then?"
asked a half-naked athlete, sweaty, girded crosswise with belts, and wearing spiked pads on his forearms.
"Do you know him, Norn?"
"No," said the man with the scar.
"It's Sam Albino,"
giggled a slim, dark-haired man sitting next to Nohorn. Delicate features, enormous black eyes and pointed ears betrayed him to be a half-blood elf.
"Albino, mutant freak of nature, and this sort of thing is allowed to enter pubs among decent people."
"I've seen him somewhere before,"
said a stocky, weather-beaten man with a plait, measuring Geralt with an evil look in his narrowed eyes.
"Doesn't matter where you've seen him, Tavik," said Nohorn.
"Listen here. Sivril insulted you terribly a moment ago. Aren't you going to challenge him? He's such a boring evening."
"No," said the Witcher calmly.
"And me? If I pour this fish soup over your head, are you going to challenge me?"
cackled the man sitting naked to the waist.
"Keep calm, 15, said Nohorn. "He said no. That means no. For the time being."
"Well, brother, say what you have to say and clear out. You've got one chance to clear out on your own. You don't take it, the attendants will carry you out."
"I don't have anything to say to you. I want to see Shrike. Renfrey." "Do you hear that, boys?"
Nohorn looked around at his companions.
"He wants to see Renfrey. And may I know why?"
"No."
Nohorn raised his head and looked at the twins as they took a step forward, the silver clasps on their high boots jangling.
"I know," the man with the plait said suddenly. "I know where I've seen him now."
"What's that you're mumbling, Tavik?"
"In front of the alderman's house. He brought some sort of dragon into trade, a cross between a spider and a crocodile. People were saying he's a witcher."
"And what's a witcher?"
15 asked. "Eh, Sivril?"
A hired magician, said the half-elf. A conjurer for a fistful of silver. I told you, a freak of nature. An insult to human and divine laws. They ought to be burned, the likes of him.
We don't like magicians,
screeched Tavik, not taking his narrowed eyes of Geralt.
It seems to me, Cyril, that we're going to have more work in this hole than we thought. There's more than one of them here, and everyone knows they stick together.
Birds of a feather,
the half-breed smiled maliciously.
To think the likes of you walk the earth. Who spawns you, freaks?
A bit more tolerance, if you please, said Geralt calmly, as I see your mother must have wandered off through the forest alone, often enough to give you good reason to wonder where you come from yourself.
Possibly,
answered the half-elf, the smile not leaving his face.
But at least I knew my mother. You witches can't say that much about yourselves.
Geralt grew a little pale and tightened his lips. Nohorn, noticing it, laughed out loud.
Well, brother, you can't let an insult like that go by. That thing that you have on your back looks like a sword. So, are you going outside with Cyril? The evening's so boring.
The Witcher didn't react.
Shitty coward,
snorted Tavik.
What did he say about Cyril's mother?
Nohorn continued monotonously, resting his chin on his clasped hands.
Something extremely nasty, as I understood it. That she was an easy lay or something. Hey, 15, is it right to listen to some straggler insulting a companion's mother? A mother, you son of a bitch, you sacred!
15 got up willingly, undid his sword and threw it on the table. He stuck his chest out, adjusted the pads spiked with silver studs on his shoulders, spat and took a step forward.
If you've got any doubts, said Nohorn, then 15 is challenging you to a fist fight. I told you they'd carry you out of here. Make room.
15 moved closer and raised his fists. Geralt put his hand on the hilt of his sword.
Careful, he said. One more step and you'll be looking for your hand on the floor.
Nohorn and Tavik leapt up, grabbing their swords. The silent twins drew theirs with identical movements. 15 stepped back. Only Cyril didn't move.
What's going on here, damn it? Can't I leave you alone for a minute?
Geralt turned round very slowly and looked into eyes the colour of the sea. She was almost as tall as him. She wore her straw-coloured hair unevenly cut, just below the ears. She stood with one hand on the door, wearing a tight velvet jacket clasped with a decorated belt. Her skirt was uneven, asymmetrical, reaching down to her calf on the left side, and on the right, revealing a strong thigh above a boot made of elk's leather. On her left side, she carried a sword. On her right, a dagger with a huge ruby set in its pommel.
Lost your voices?
He's a witcher, mumbled Nohorn.
So what?
He wanted to talk to you.
So what? He's a sorcerer,
15 roared.
We don't like sorcerers,
snarled Tavik.
Take it easy, boys, said the girl. He wants to talk to me. That's no crime. You carry on having a good time, and no trouble. Tomorrow's market day. Surely you don't want your pranks to disrupt the market. Such an important event in the life of this pleasant town.
A quiet, nasty giggle reverberated in the silence which fell. Cyril, still sprawled out carelessly on the bench, was laughing.
Come on, Renfrey, chuckled the half-blood. Important event. Shut up, Cyril, immediately.
Cyril stopped laughing immediately. Geralt wasn't surprised. There was something very strange in Renfrey's voice, something associated with the red reflection of fire on blades, the wailing of people being murdered, the whinnying of horses and the smell of blood. Others must also have had similar associations. Even Tavik's weather-beaten face grew pale.
Well, white hair?
Renfrey broke the silence.
Let's go into the larger room. Let's join the alderman you came with. He wants to talk to me too, no doubt.
At the sight of them, Quatermain, who was waiting at the counter, broke off his quiet conversation with the innkeeper, straightened himself, and folded his arms across his chest.
Listen, young lady, he said severely,
not wasting time with banal niceties.
I know from this witcher of Rivia here what brings you to Blaviken, Apparently you bear a grudge against our wizard.
Maybe. What of it?
Asked Renfrey quietly, in an equally brusque tone.
Only that there are tribunals to deal with grudges like that. He who wants to revenge a grudge using steel, here in Arxy, is considered a common bandit. And also, that either you get out of Blaviken early in the morning with your black companions, or I throw you into prison, how do you say it, Geralt?
Preventively.
Exactly. Understood, young lady?
Renfrey reached into the purse on her belt and pulled out a parchment which had been folded several times.
Read this, Alderman, if you're literate, and don't call me young lady.
Quatermain took the parchment, spent a long time reading it, then, without a word, gave it to Geralt.
To my regents, vassals, and freemen subjects, the Witcher read out loud, to all and sundry, I proclaim that Renfrey, the Princess of Craydon, remains in our service and is well seen by us. Whosoever dares maltreat her will incur our wrath. Audouin, King.
Maltreat is not spelt like that, but the seal appears authentic.
Because it is authentic, said Renfrey, snatching the parchment from him. It was affixed by Audouin, your merciful lord. That's why I don't advise you to maltreat me. Irrespective of how you spell it, the consequences for you would be lamentable. You are not, Honourable Alderman, going to put me in prison, or call me young lady. I haven't infringed any law. For the time being.
If you infringe by even an inch...
Quatermain looked as if he wanted to spit.
I'll throw you in the dungeon together with this piece of paper. I swear on all the gods, young lady. Come on, Geralt.
With you, Witcher.
Renfrey touched Geralt's shoulder.
I'd still like a word.
Don't be late for supper, the alderman threw over his shoulder. Only Boucher will be furious.
I won't.
Geralt leant against the counter, fiddling with a wolf's head medallion hanging around his neck. He looked into the girl's blue-green eyes.
I've heard about you, she said. You're Geralt, the white-haired witcher from Rivia. Is Stregobor your friend?
No.
That makes things easier.
Not much. Don't expect me to look on peacefully.
Renfrey's eyes narrowed.
Stregobor dies tomorrow, she said quietly,
brushing the unevenly cut hair off her forehead.
It would be the lesser evil if he died alone.
If he did,
yes.
But in fact, before Stregobor dies, several other people will die too. I don't see any other possibility.
Several, Witcher, is putting it mildly.
You need more than words to frighten me, Shrike.
Don't call me Shrike. I don't like it. The point is, I see other possibilities. It would be worth talking it over. But Labusha is waiting. Is she pretty, this Labusha?
Is that all you had to say to me?
No. But you should go. Libusha's waiting.
Part 4. There was someone in his little attic room. Geralt knew it before he even reached the door, sensing it through the barely perceptible vibration of his medallion. He blew out the oil lamp which had lit his path up the stairs, pulled the dagger from his boot, slipped it into the back of his belt, and pressed the door handle. The room was dark, but not for a witcher. He was deliberately slow in crossing the threshold. He closed the door behind him carefully. The next second, he dived at the person sitting on his bed, crushed them into the linen, forced his forearm under their chin, and reached for his dagger. He didn't pull it out. Something wasn't right.
Not a bad start,
she said in a muffled voice, lying motionless beneath him.
I expected something like this. But I didn't think we'd both be in bed so quickly. Take your hand from my throat, please.
It's you.
It's me. Now, there are two possibilities. The first, you get off me and we talk. The second, we stay in this position, in which case I'd like to take my boots off, at least.
The Witcher released the girl, who sighed, sat up and adjusted her hair and skirt.
Light the candle, she said. I can't see in the dark, unlike you, and I like to see who I'm talking to.
She approached the table, tall, slim, agile, and sat down, stretching out her long legs in their high boots. She wasn't carrying any visible weapons.
Have you got anything to drink here?
No.
Then it's a good thing I brought something.
She laughed, placing a travelling wineskin and two leather tumblers on the table. It's nearly midnight, said Geralt coldly. Shall we come to the point?
In a minute. Here, have a drink. Here's to you, Geralt.
Likewise, Shrike.
My name's Renfri, damn it!
She raised her head.
I will permit you to omit my royal title, but stop calling me Shrike!
Be quiet, or you'll wake the whole house. Am I finally going to learn why you crept in here through the window?
You're slow-witted, Witcher. I want to save Blaviken from slaughter. I crawled over the rooftops like a she-cat in March in order to talk to you about it. Appreciate it.
I do, said Geralt, except that I don't know what talk can achieve. The situation's clear. Stregobor is in his tower, and you'd have to lay siege to it in order to get to him. If you do that, your letter of safe conduct won't help you. Audouin won't defend you if you openly break the law. The aldermen, guards, the whole of Blaviken will stand against you.
The whole of Blaviken would regret standing up to me.
Renfri smiled, revealing a predator's white teeth.
Did you take a look at my boys? They know their trade, I assure you. Can you imagine what would happen in a fight between them and those dimwit guards who keep tripping over their own halberds?
Do you imagine I would stand by and watch a fight like that? I'm staying at the Alderman's, as you can see. If the need arises, I should stand at his side.
I have no doubt, Renfri grew serious, that you will. But you'll probably be alone, as the rest will cower in the cellars. No warrior in the world could match 7 swordsmen. So, Whitehair, let's stop threatening each other. As I said, slaughter and bloodshed can be avoided. There are 2 people who can prevent it.
I'm all ears.
One, said Renfri, is Stregobor himself. He leaves his tower voluntarily. I take him to a deserted spot, and Blaviken sinks back into blissful apathy and forgets the whole affair.
Stregobor may seem crazy, but he's not that crazy.
Who knows, Witcher? Who knows? Some arguments can't be denied, like the Treedam ultimatum. I plan to present it to the sorcerer.
What is it, this ultimatum?
That's my sweet secret.
As you wish, but I doubt it'll be effective. Stregobor's teeth chatter when he speaks of you. An ultimatum which would persuade him to voluntarily surrender himself into your beautiful hands would have to be pretty good. So, who's the other person? Let me guess.
I wonder how sharp you are, Whitehair.
It's you, Renfri. You'll reveal a truly princely, what am I saying, royal magnanimity, and renounce your revenge. Have I guessed?
Renfri threw back her head and laughed, covering her mouth with her hand. Then she grew silent and fixed her shining eyes on the Witcher. Geralt, she said. I used to be a princess. I had everything I could dream of. Servants at my beck and call. Dresses, shoes, cambric knickers, jewels and trinkets, ponies, goldfish in a pond. Dolls, and a doll's house bigger than this room. That was my life, until Stregobor and that whore Aridea ordered a huntsman to butcher me in the forest and bring back my heart and liver. Lovely, don't you think?
No. I'm pleased you evaded the huntsman, Renfri.
Like shit I did. He took pity on me and let me go, after the son of a bitch raped me and robbed me.
Geralt, fiddling with his medallion, looked her straight in the eyes. She didn't lower hers.
That was the end of the princess, she continued. The dress grew torn. The cambric grew grubby. And then there was dirt, hunger, stench, stink and abuse. Selling myself to any old bum for a bowl of soup or a roof over my head. Do you know what my hair was like? Silk, and it reached a good foot below my hips. I had it cut right to the scalp with sheep shears when I caught lice. It's never grown back properly. She was silent for a moment, idly brushing the uneven strands of hair from her forehead. I stole rather than starve to death. I killed to avoid being killed myself. I was locked in prisons which stank of urine, never knowing if they would hang me in the morning or just flog me and release me. And through it all, my stepmother and your sorcerer were hard on my heels with their poisons and assassins and spells. And you want me to reveal my magnanimity, to forgive him royally. I'll tear his head off royally first. Aradea and Stregobor tried to poison you. With an apple, seasoned with nightshade. I was saved by a gnome and an emetic I thought would turn my insides out. But I survived.
Was that one of the seven gnomes? Renfrey, pouring wine, froze, holding the wineskin over the tumbler.
Ah, she said, you do know a lot about me. Yes. Do you have something against gnomes, or humanoids? They were better to me than most people. Not that it's your business. Stregobor and Aradea hunted me like a wild animal as long as they could. Until I became the hunter. Aradea died in her own bed. She was lucky I didn't get to her earlier. I had a special plan for her. And now I've got one for the sorcerer. Do you think he deserves to die?
I'm no judge. I'm a witcher.
You are. I said that there were two people who could prevent bloodshed in Blaviken. The second is you. The sorcerer will let you into the tower. You could kill him.
Renfrey, said Geralt calmly, did you fall from the roof onto your head on the way to my room?
Are you a witcher or aren't you, damn it? They say you killed a Kikimora and brought it here on a donkey to get a price for it. Stregobor is worse than the Kikimora. It's just a mindless beast which kills because that's how the gods made it. Stregobor is a brute, a true monster. Bring him to me on a donkey, and I won't begrudge you any sum you care to mention.
I'm not a hired thug, Shrike.
You're not,
she agreed with a smile. She leant back on the stool and crossed her legs on the table, without the slightest effort to cover her thighs with her skirt.
You're a witcher, a defender of people from evil. And evil is the steel and fire which will cause devastation here if we fight each other. Don't you think I'm proposing a lesser evil, a better solution? Even for that son of a bitch Stregobor. You can kill him mercifully with one thrust. He'll die without knowing it. And I guarantee him quite the reverse.
Geralt remained silent. Renfrey stretched, raising her arms.
I understand your hesitation, she said. But I need an answer, now.
Do you know why Stregobor and the king's wife wanted to kill you?
Renfrey straightened abruptly and took her legs off the table.
It's obvious, she snarled. I am heir to the throne. Aradea's children were born out of wedlock and don't have any right to...
No.
Renfrey lowered her head, but only for a moment. Her eyes flashed.
Fine. I'm supposed to be cursed, contaminated in my mother's womb. I'm supposed to be...
Yes?
A monster.
And are you?
For a fleeting moment, she looked helpless, shattered, and very sad.
I don't know, Geralt,
she whispered, and then her features hardened again.
Because how am I to know, damn it? When I cut my finger, I bleed. I bleed every month, too. I get bellyache when I overeat, and a hangover when I get drunk. When I'm happy, I sing, and I swear when I'm sad. When I hate someone, I kill them, and when... But enough of this! Your answer, Witcher.
My answer is no.
You remember what I said?
She asked, after a moment's silence.
There are offers you can't refuse. The consequences are so terrible. And this is one of them. Think it over.
I have thought carefully, and my suggestion was as serious.
Renfrey was silent for some time, fiddling with a string of pearls wound 3 times around her shapely neck, before falling teasingly between her breasts, their curves just visible through the slit of her jacket.
Geralt, she said, did Stregobor ask you to kill me?
Yes. He believed it was the lesser evil.
Can I believe you refused him, as you have me?
You can.
Why?
Because I don't believe in a lesser evil.
Renfrey smiled faintly, an ugly grimace in the yellow candlelight.
You don't believe in it, you say? Well, you're right, in a way. Only evil and greater evil exist, and beyond them, in the shadows, lurks true evil. True evil, Geralt, is something you can barely imagine. Even if you believe, nothing can still surprise you. And sometimes true evil seizes you by the throat and demands that you choose between it and another, slightly lesser, evil.
What's your goal here, Renfrey?
Nothing. I've had a bit to drink and I'm philosophizing. I'm looking for general truths. And I found one. Lesser evils exist, but we can't choose them. Only true evil can force us to such a choice, whether we like it or not.
Maybe I've not had enough to drink.
The Witcher smiled sourly.
And in the meantime, midnight's passed the way it does. Let's speak plainly. You're not going to kill Stregobor in Blaviken, because I'm not going to let you. I'm not going to let it come to a slaughter here. So for the second time, renounce your revenge. Prove to him, to everyone, that you're not an inhuman and bloodthirsty monster. Prove he has done you great harm through his mistake.
For a moment, Renfrey watched the witch's medallion spinning as he twisted the chain.
And if I tell you, Witcher, that I can neither forgive Stregobor nor renounce my revenge, then I admit that he is right? Is that it? I'll be proving that I am a monster cursed by the gods? You know, when I was still new to this life, a freeman took me in. He took a fancy to me, even though I found him repellent. So every time he wanted to fuck me, he had to beat me so hard I could barely move, even the following day. One morning, I rose while it was still dark and slashed his throat with a scythe. I wasn't yet as skilled as I am now, and the knife seemed too small. And as I listened to him gurgle and choke, watched him kicking and flailing, I felt the marks left by his feet and fists fade. And I felt, oh, so great that... I left him whistling, sprightly, feeling so joyful, so happy. And it's the same each time. If it wasn't, who'd waste time on revenge?
Renfrey, said Geralt. Whatever your motives, you're not going to leave here joyful and happy. But you'll leave here alive early tomorrow morning, as the Alderman ordered. You're not going to kill Stregobor in Blaviken.
Renfrey's eyes glistened in the candlelight, reflecting the flame. The pearls glowed in the slit of her jacket. The wolf medallion, spinning round on its chain, sparkled.
I pity you, she said slowly,
gazing at the medallion.
You claim a lesser evil doesn't exist. You're standing on a flagstone running with blood, alone and so very lonely. Because you can't choose.
But you had to. And you'll never know. You'll never be sure if you were right. And your reward will be a stoning and a bad word. I pity you.
And you? Asked the Witcher quietly, almost in a whisper.
I can't choose either.
What are you?
I am what I am.
Where are you?
I'm cold.
Renfri. Geralt squeezed the medallion tightly in his hand. She tossed her head as if waking up and blinked several times, surprised. For a very brief moment, she looked frightened.
You've won,
she said sharply.
You win, Witcher. Tomorrow morning I'll leave Blaviken and never return to this rotten town. Never. Now pass me the wineskin.
Her usual derisive smile returned as she put her empty tumbler back on the table.
Geralt?
I'm here.
That bloody roof is steep. I'd prefer to leave at dawn than fall and hurt myself in the dark. I'm a princess, and my body's delicate. I can feel a pea under a mattress, as long as it's not well stuffed with straw, obviously. How about it?
Renfri. Geralt smiled despite himself. Is that really befitting of a princess?
What do you know about princesses, damn it? I've lived as one, and the joy of it is being able to do what you like. Do I have to tell you straight out what I want?
Geralt, still smiling, didn't reply.
I can't believe you don't find me attractive.
Renfri grimaced.
Are you afraid you'll meet the Freeman's sticky fate? Huh? White hair? I haven't got anything sharp on me. Have a look for yourself.
She put her legs on his knees.
Pull my boots off. A high boot is the best place to hide a knife.
Barefoot, she got up, tore at the buckle of her belt.
I'm not hiding anything here, either. Or here, as you can see. Put that bloody candle out.
Outside, in the darkness, a cat yawled. Renfri.
What?
Is this Cambric?
Of course it is, damn it. Am I a princess or not?
Part 5.
Daddy!
Marilka nagged monotonously.
When are we going to the market? To the market, Daddy!
Quiet, Marilka, grunted Quatermain,
wiping his plate with his bread.
So what were you saying, Geralt? They're leaving.
Yes.
I never thought it would end so peacefully. They had me by the throat with that letter from Arduin. I put on a brave face, but to tell you the truth, I couldn't do a thing to them.
Even if they openly broke the law, started a fight?
Even if they did, Arduin's a very touchy king. He sends people to the scaffold on a whim. I've got a wife, a daughter, and I'm happy with my office. I don't have to worry where the bacon will come from tomorrow. It's good news that they're leaving. But how? And why did it happen?
Daddy, I want to go to the market.
Libusha, take Marilka away. Geralt, I asked Centurion, the Golden Court's innkeeper, about that Novigradian company. They're quite a gang. Some of them were recognised.
Yes?
The one with the gash across his face is Nohorn, Abigard's old adjutant from the so-called Free Angren Company. You'll have heard of them. That hulk they call 15 was one of theirs too, and I don't think his nickname comes from 15 good deeds. The half-elf is Sivril, a brigand and professional murderer. Apparently he had something to do with a massacre at Treedam.
Where?
Treedam? Didn't you hear of it? Everyone was talking about it 3 years ago. The Baron of Treedam was holding some brigands in the dungeons. Their comrades, one of whom was that half-blood Sivril, seized a river ferry full of pilgrims during the Feast of Nice. They demanded the Baron set those others free, but the Baron refused, so they began murdering pilgrims one after another. By the time the Baron released his prisoners, they'd thrown a dozen pilgrims overboard to drift with the current, and following the deaths, the Baron was in danger of exile or even of execution. Some blamed him for waiting so long to give in, and others claimed he'd committed a great evil in releasing the men, in setting a precedent or something. The gang should have been shot from the banks, together with the hostages, or attacked on the boats. He shouldn't have given an inch. At the tribunal, the Baron argued he'd had no choice. He'd chosen the lesser evil, to save more than 25 people, women and children, on the ferry.
"The Tree Dam ultimatum," whispered the Witcher. "Renfrew."
"What?"
"Caldermain, the marketplace."
"What?"
"She's deceived us. They're not leaving. They'll force Stregobor out of his tower, as they force the Baron of Treedom's hand. Or they'll force me to—"
"They're going to start murdering people at the market. It's a real trap."
"By all the gods, but where are you going? Sit down!"
Marilka, terrified by the shouting, huddled, keening in the corner of the kitchen.
"I told you,"
Limbusha shouted, pointing to the Witcher.
"I said he only brings trouble."
"Silence, woman. Get out. Sit down."
"We have to stop them, right now, before people go to the market, and call the guards. As the gang leaves the inn, seize them and hold them."
"Be reasonable, we can't. They can't touch a hair of their heads if they've done nothing wrong. They'll defend themselves and there'll be bloodshed. They are professionals. They'll slaughter my people, and it'll be my head for it if word gets to Alduin. I'll gather the guards, go to the market and keep an eye on them there. That won't achieve anything, Caldermain.
If the crowd's already in the square, you can't prevent panic and slaughter. Renfrew has to be stopped right now, while the marketplace is empty."
"It's illegal. I can't permit it. It's only a rumour the half-elf was at Treedam. You could be wrong, and Alduin would flay me alive."
"We have to take the lesser evil."
"Geralt, I forbid it. As alderman, I forbid it. Leave your sword. Stop!"
Marilka was screaming, her hands pressed over her mouth. Part 6. Shading his eyes with his hand, Sivril watched the sun emerge from behind the trees. The marketplace was coming to life. Wagons and carts rumbled past, and the first vendors were already filling their stalls. A hammer was banging, a cock crowing, and seagulls screeched loudly overhead.
"Looks like a lovely day,"
15 said pensively. Sivril looked at him askance, but didn't say anything.
"The horse is all right, Tavik?"
asked Nohorn, pulling on his gloves.
"Saddled and ready, but there's still not many of them in the marketplace."
"There'll be more."
"We should eat."
"Later."
"Dead right. You'll have time later, and an appetite."
"Look," said 15 suddenly.
The Witcher was approaching from the main street, walking between stalls, coming straight towards them.
"Renfrew was right," Sivril said. "Give me the crossbow, Nohorn."
He hunched over, and holding the strap down with his foot, pulled the string back. He placed the bolt carefully in the groove as the Witcher continued to approach. Sivril raised the crossbow.
"Not one step closer, Witcher!"
Geralt stopped about 40 paces from the group.
"Where's Renfrew?"
The half-blood's pretty face contorted.
"At the tower. She's making the sorcerer an offer he can't refuse. But she knew you would come. She left a message for you."
"Speak."
"I am what I am. Choose. Either me or a lesser. You're supposed to know what it means."
The Witcher nodded, raised his hand above his right shoulder, and drew his sword. The blade traced a glistening arc above his head. Walking slowly, he made his way towards the group. Sivril laughed, nastily, ominously.
"Renfrew said this would happen, Witcher, and left us something special to give you, right between the eyes."
The Witcher kept walking, and the half-elf raised the crossbow to his cheek. It grew very quiet. The bowstring hummed, the Witcher's sword flashed, and the bolt flew upwards with a metallic whine, spinning in the air until it clattered against the roof and rumbled into the gutter.
"He deflected it,"
groaned 15.
"Deflected it in flight."
"There's one,"
ordered Sivril. Blades hissed as they were drawn from sheaths. The group pressed shoulder to shoulder, bristling with blades. The Witcher came on faster. His fluid walk became a run, not straight at the group.